Okay, I'm going to introduce the person who's going to introduce. Michael.
Hi, I'm Mike. Tonight's speaker is La La Land. No, just kidding. I need a lot of programming. There's a book called Lois Remembers. Lois Wilson says that Al-Anon is a place where we come to love better. And the man who's going to speak to us tonight, I think, embodies that really well. Not only that, but he's a wonderful teacher. He's taught the entire 7 o'clock Let's Rock men's group the proper pronunciation of the word, say it with me, controversy. Now you know. Go forth and prosper. It's a distinct pleasure to welcome to the lectern a brilliant and kind soul, Peter.
Well, I'm glad we've settled that controversy. No, people are in a state of shock. They've never quite seen me in coat and tie, and we're not noted in this meeting for our fashion sense. In fact, when I saw Rick tonight in a suit, I thought to follow him up. I thought, oh my God, they've done a La La Land on me. And I'd like to thank Rick for this great honor to address my home group. It's truly an honor. And I'd also like to welcome our newcomer, Ted. We got it right. And welcome, Ted. And I just warn you now, things get a little bit weird after you've been to your first meeting. I won't say any more, except that when I came to my first Al-Anon meeting, this here isn't where I expect it to be 27 years later. This isn't something that comes to me naturally. I'm a little bit nervous, but I always have been. When I was first in the program, I think one of the first times I was asked to lead, I almost had a meltdown, a panic attack, and my wife said to me, for God's sake, how long is the lead? And I said, 3 minutes. And she said, oh my God, you are insane. So, I got up there, and sure enough, 1 minute 30 seconds into the lead, I froze up. And I thought, oh my God, this is where I get tarred and feathered out of Al-Anon. And instead, people rushed up to me. I got more hugs than I ever had in my whole life. And we understand, we've all done this. So the sad thing is, I've never had a reception like that since. Don't start leaving, because I have, it is progress, and I have made considerable progress. I've been known to do 10 minutes. So let's start. I was born in Australia and into a very dysfunctional family. My mother was manic depressive. My older sister was an untreated Al-Anon, and my middle sister was in and out of mental institutions most of her life. She stabilized pretty well today. And my father didn't call himself an alcoholic, but his favorite drink was what he called a coffee royal. And that was filling the biggest mug he could find with brandy and waving the coffee pot over it. And he was a very stoic man. He hardly ever said anything. And I go to a football game with him, and he'd never shout or cheer, and the only way I could tell he was involved in the game was he'd start leaning into me, trying to draw the ball down the other end of the field. And the only time I can ever remember seeing him animated was when the brewery workers threatened to go on strike. In our family, you know, none of this was discussed, and you know, I'd come down to breakfast the morning, and my middle sister wouldn't be there, and you know, I instinctively knew she was back in the mental hospital, and but nothing was ever said. It was just there was an empty place at the table, and everybody went about the day as if she was there. So I just stuffed everything down and down and down, and I continued that for more than 50 years, and nothing. You know, I didn't discuss anything with her. We never talked about it in the family, as I said. And I began drinking myself when I couldn't stop it down anymore. And when I, one of the ironies is when I met my alcoholic wife, I drank more than she did. But when when I came to give it up, I just did it like that. And she had an enormous struggle in giving it up. I was in such denial when I got into Al-Anon. You know, I remember going to meetings, you know, and this good first year, and they'd read Understanding Ourselves, and we'd get to the line about, you know, some of us are smug, arrogant, self-righteous, and even dominating. And I would say, nod my head and I think, well, at least I'm not like that. I think the break in my denial came about a year into Al-Anon, when my wife was in. I came out of her first, I think it was her first rehab, I lost count, and one day I walked into the garage and there she was, downing a pint of vodka, and I went bananas, I went crazy, and so much so that in the end she had to call her therapist to call me to calm me down, and you know, that was my first awareness of the insanity of my thinking. You know, that maybe I had some sort of responsibility in all this. Because you know, I took the focus right off her drinking and put it on me and all her girlfriends and our friends. You know, just they didn't even think it. Talk about her drinking. It was, you know, they just say, "No, well, no wonder she drinks, married to that asshole." the big turning, that was a pivotal moment for me, because when I got to my fourth step, I began recognizing, you know, my part in the crazy situation and my insanity, I began to change, and my higher power stepped in there and gave me tools to turn that around. And my wife continued drinking for another 10 years. But once I took the focus off her, our marriage began to improve. And during those 10 years, we had some good times. We went away on vacation, and we had a good time. I remember one time we went to see the Four Colors, and I was aware that she was started drinking again, and that was okay. I just let it go, and you know, that was already an enormous difference. And when she finally got sober, both of us were more. I was emotionally sober too, to a degree, and you know, and we got our marriage back on the track, we began to build a very good marriage from that point on. But I couldn't have done it without this program. I remember Jim, my first sponsor. He took me aside and he said, you know, this is a spiritual program, and if you go to one meeting a week, you'll grow a little bit, and if you go to two meetings a week, you'll grow a little bit faster, and if you actually start working the steps, you'll grow rapidly. And I took that to heart, and I began working the steps very, very seriously. I didn't think I was very willing at all, but at one stage, Jim gave me a book, and he inscribed it to a very willing sponsee, and I thought, oh, that's a load of bullshit. But now I look back today, and I was willing. I didn't want to go to Al-Anon, but I went to Al-Anon. I didn't want to get a sponsor, but I got a sponsor. I didn't want to do the steps, but I did. And I dreaded doing a fourth step, but I did it. And once I began working those steps, as I said, my life began to change. I hadn't, with the first three steps, I had an enormous struggle. I didn't think I could ever get the third step. But then, you know, I later realized God already had my back, even though I didn't believe in him. And I remember one day I was at a meeting, and I expressed my frustration and, you know, my struggle and that. And after the meeting, this fiery Scotswoman took me aside and said, you know, Peter, you know, just throw all that intellectual crap out and just look for the coincidences, and you'll see there are so many coincidences, there aren't any. And Bill W., you know, the founder of AA, talks about if you can just crack that door open a fraction, you're home and hosed. And that was my experience. Once I opened that door a little bit, you know, I began to see how my higher power was working in my life. And it was just remarkable. I came to understand that God, only God can remove my defects of character, and believe me, I tried hard to remove them myself, I had no luck at all. It's God's 10, Peter 0. one of the, it's like valet parking. You God takes them up to Lot C, and if you want your defects back, you've got to pay a price. the way I discovered that God works in my life is, you know, one day my wife's wife said to me, you know, do you realize that you swear a lot under the shower? And I was indignant. I said, no, I don't. But I decided to listen to my soul. And sure enough, you know, this is a family group, I guess. But some of the stuff I was telling myself, beating myself up, was horrific. And that's the way God works in my life. He raises my awareness, and then I take it. Then I've got to work the principles of the program. And when my willingness meets God's willingness, incredible things happen. One day I was, you know, several years into Al-Anon. Oh, thank you, Willie. Several years into Al-Anon, I heard the do's and don'ts at a meeting one day, and I really heard them this time, and I particularly heard get hobbies and recreation, and great idea. I was feeling a lot of stress in my work, and I got home, and my wife had left a community college brochure on the dining room table, and I said to myself, you know, I'll put my finger in there, whatever it lands on, I'll do that class. And it happened to be a watercolor class. And as much to my surprise and everybody else's, I actually, I called up and they said, well, you've got to talk to the instructor. He won't allow anybody in. And he got very angry with me. He said, you know, I don't allow hobbyists in my class. You need to, if you're going to be in my class, you need to take another one too. And then I thought, well, at least I tried. And then miraculously he said, okay, you're enrolled. Watercolor painting has been my great teacher in Al-Anon. I've been in local, regional, and national shows. I've won countless prizes, but that isn't why my higher power put art in my life. It is to teach me lessons, and I had to struggle with my ego at one stage, and my sponsor, you know, got me through it, saying, you know, what's all this about? Ribbons and that? You know, what's a ribbon? What's a first place ribbon? It's nothing but a piece of cloth. And I got through to the other side, and of that and many, many other things. I've learned so much about myself and my origins. I had an art teacher who didn't teach technique, but she taught me to understand what I put on paper. And she was an incredible teacher. And one day she said to me, you know, you're using a lot of red and blue lately. You know, what's all that about? And I said, that's color, Terry, it's color. And she said, no, I want you to think about that, write about that. And I did. And what I discovered was, as a boy, I had a ritual with my father. He would take me into Melbourne, and we would have lunch together and go to a football game. You know, we barely talked, but it was a ritual I treasured. You know, it was one of the few real contacts I had with my father, and then we followed the Melbourne football team, and then when I remembered that, the colours of the team were red and blue. And, you know, that let me open the door to examining my relationship with my father and so much else. And it has taught me so many things. And I'm still learning. Art has expanded my life. What I've learned in Al-Anon, I have taken into the outside world. I remember somebody at this very podium talking about how she rose in Al-Anon through the ranks right up to becoming a delegate in Al-Anon, but she never took what she learned in the program outside. And she said, you know, it all came crashing down on her because she hadn't practiced what she'd learned outside. And that lesson stuck with me very, very much. And I've been on the board of directors of an art group. I've been an exhibition chair. And this year I got representation with a gallery in Laguna Beach, and you know, it's my life is continuing to expand because I'm dealing with people, and this was a man that until I got into Al-Anon, who just hit out, and I was so frightened of people, and coming to this meeting, you know, what 100 guys, you've got to be kidding. coming here, that experience with art gave me the courage to come here. And when I got here, these wonderful men, and I'm ever grateful to them, you know, welcomed me. And today I can say I'm very, very comfortable with around them and around people. You know, my higher power works in so many different ways. You know, going back earlier, I was so inward, and I went to a meeting one day, and we went to fellowship afterwards, and my wife was coming home from yet another rehab, and I said to the, you know, at fellowship, you know, what in the hell am I going to do with her? You know, she's barely sober, and you know, I went on and on, you know what, how whiny we can get, and finally this grizzled old timer said to me, for God's sake, Peter, you know, just take her to bed and screw her. and everybody picked up on that story. And for the next hour, they teased me mercilessly. And I left, and I got in the car, and my sides were aching from laughing. And I started the car, and I began to cry, because I realized I hadn't laughed, and I couldn't remember the last time. And that was another one of those pivotal moments for me. You know, life is so good today, and you know, I'm having such adventures and that with my art and everything. It's wonderful, but back in those early days, I thought, you know, I expected, oh, you know, it's going to be, you know, I'm going to reach the stage in Al-Anon where everything, I'm not going to have any problems at all. Everything's just going to be, you know, a pink cloud. That isn't, I discovered the hard way. In fact, some of the worst, or the greatest challenges of my life have happened to me while I've been while I've been in Al-Anon. I got laid off from my job, and that effectively ended a 45-year career. I just couldn't get, being near retirement age, I couldn't get back into my field, and I went to I set off. Well, I'm not going to work for any less than $60 an hour, and then I finally came down, and finally I gratefully accepted a job at Target for minimum wage. But I am so grateful for Target today for that experience. And I just mentioned, we used to joke, one of their slogans is, pay less and expect more. And all of us workers said, that's their employment policy. I came from a job where I was responsible for the entire west coast of America, and then suddenly I was at Target, and I had one shelf. I tell you, it's addictive. I wait in line at the pharmacy today, and I see something sticking off the shelf, and I've got to go up and tap it back in. And actually, in one way, Target felt very comfortable. They originally assigned me to the stock room, and I thought, screw this, I'm not going to work in the stock room. So I saw a chap there, and I thought, oh, I'll get on his team. And of course, he was an alcoholic drug addict, and he was having an affair with the untreated Al-Anon and Health and Beauty, and then we had a real alcoholic in the garden department. Every now and then we would have to load him into one of the shopping carts. And when the store manager was on the prowl, you could hear it on the walkie-talkie, the garden consignment is being taken to the warehouse. Some of the things I looked at, and things my sponsor had told me began to drop in place. I was good. I had two shelves, and I always thought, people said, Peter, he's so anal, but at Target, I was the star. Executives would come down to show off my perfect aisles. and I remember Jim used to say, at the penny finally dropped, he said, there are no character defects, there are just character traits, and it's the way you use the character traits that makes the difference. And I saw there, suddenly being anal was nothing to be ashamed of. It was a badge. But it was often painful, because I really had to confront my perfectionism. And I'd never thought I was a perfectionist. But the store closed at 10 o'clock at night. So, being I was working in sporting goods, so I would start getting my shelves in order by before the store closed. Well, God showed me the futility of perfectionism. Sporting goods was right next door to the toy department, and the little darlings would come down, see the hockey sticks there, and then run them down the down my beautifully precise aisles of basketballs and volleyballs. So, you know, I look back on that. It lasted 3 years, and I look back on that that experience as one of the best things that have ever happened to me. It was painful at the time, but if I had to do it all over again, I would do it again, because I learned so much about myself, and I grew so much in that that period. Another thing that another blow that happened, my wife died 4 years ago, and she had 11 years of sobriety at that time, and we turned our marriage around. You know, my higher power was with me so much. A very close friend who was living up in Santa Cruz, he said, we knew she didn't have very long to live, and he said, I'm going to come down and support you. And he got as far as Oakland, and something made him park the car at Oakland Airport and fly down, and he walked into her room about 2 minutes after she died, and he was there to support me. Then on almost immediately, I began developing a resentment. You know, they said, you know, take as long as you like, but, you know, soon they were in there saying, you know, you need to fill out the autopsy authorization, you need to do this. And then people around me began talking about other things, and, you know, don't you know my wife has just died? And then something said to me, and to me it was my higher power, said, you know, you've got a choice. You can wallow in this, or you can move on. And that train is leaving the station right now, and it's your choice. And at that moment, I decided on doing contrary action, and it was just before Christmas, and I did that. I did for the next few weeks. In fact, I still do it today. I do. I did whatever I didn't want to do, and I went Christmas Day. I went to 3 potlucks, and even then, I found myself isolating at one stage. In the potluck, and I made myself get up, go over, and introduce myself and talk to somebody I didn't know, and you know, that has been such a valuable tool for me. doing contrary action, you know, when I got the offer to go to. To join the gallery in Laguna Beach, I thought, you know, I didn't want to do it, you know, too much of a risk, but contrary action again, you know, told me to do it. And I don't know how it's going to turn out, but, you know, I'll find out. And I know, you know, whatever it is, it'll be another target. It might be painful. If it's bad and it's painful, I will have learned something and I will have grown.
God's got a sense of humor too. I was with my wife when she died. I was holding her hand and I could feel, you know, it suddenly began getting cold, and the doctor came in and said, yes, you know, she's passed on, and he closed her eye, but, you know, he didn't quite close one eye. And they said, sit there, spend some time with her. And I sat there, and, you know, there she is looking at me, one eye closed, the other one half open. And I could just hear her, well, Peter, this is another fine mess you've got me into. But the power of the steps, they are just incredible. This is a story I don't tell very often, and it's one that my sponsor encourages me to tell, and I don't know why I'm reluctant to do it. But about a month after Julian died, I was about to go off and meet my sponsor, and I was a bit early, so I thought, I'll go through one of her drawers there. And in there I found this big envelope, and I opened it up, and I took out all these letters, and it was too late to put the genie back in the bottle. And there were love letters from a man. And I knew the man involved. And I knew he'd died of cancer, and it was some years before. But it really, really rocked my universe. And I went and saw my sponsor, and he said, well, when did this happen? And I said, about half an hour ago. And he said, oh, no wonder you're angry. And I was into self-righteous anger, and man, there is nothing like self-righteous anger. It is wonderful, you know. In fact, I said to David, my sponsor, you know, I told him about this later, and my sponsor is no saint. Yeah, he has a past, and he said, oh yes, he said, self-righteous anger. He said, it's like a cocaine rush. But the steps began to work me. I noticed that, you know, on unrelated things, I would go back to this pot of self-righteous anger, and I would stir it again. And once I began realizing that, I recognized that it was time to do the steps. But, you know, I'd felt my feelings. I'd gone down and I picked up her ashes from the crematorium, and I strapped them into the front seat, and it was an hour's drive back to Sherman Oaks, and man, I gave it to her. If she hadn't been cremated, she would have been by the time we got back. My sponsor didn't even have to kick my butt. I I did an inventory on it, and it shocked me. I did the inventory around that period, and it showed that I wasn't paying attention to the marriage. I was smug, arrogant, self-righteous, and dominating. And once I'd done my fifth step on it, you know, I'd go back to that pot of self-righteous anger, and there was just nothing there. Just all the power of God had gone out of that anger. And then David said to me a bit later, he said, you know, how are you doing on that situation with Jillian? And I said, well, I'm okay. I'm about ready to forgive her. And he said, whoa, stop right there. He said, maybe you can forgive yourself. But he said, you know, forgiving her is like cutting somebody off in the freeway and then forgiving them because they gave you the finger. and it was once I did an amends letter to Jillian, and I put it in the computer, and I'm doing a living amends. I'm trying to be in my other relationships. And I think I'm a better person for it all. And once I was in acceptance, once I'd done all my amends, God said, "Okay, you have that one doubt, which I had accepted that I might never know, that you know, did she stay in the marriage out of convenience or what?" And then one day I picked up a book from the bookshelf, and something fell out, and it was something dated that she had written for her sponsor, and she said how much she loved me and how much she appreciated the marriage. So there is the power of the steps, and today I'm completely comfortable. I recognize my part in it, and I feel, when I look, I don't dwell on it, but when I look back, I feel not shame, but some guilt for, you know, how unaware I was, and for my part in it. And to wrap it up, this is the wonder of this program, you know. And I often say this, when I came into Al-Anon and realized I was married to an alcoholic, and incidentally, she was an English woman, and to hear a drunk walk in a proper English accent is just so special. But, you know, when I realized she was an alcoholic, I thought my life was over. But in I look back today and I realize it was just beginning. Thank you.